A city is stronger together. So let's hear from the business and community leaders that keep Milwaukee on the upswing. Presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now here's the host that's always on the upswing, WTMJ's Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Welcome to the upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Happy summer solstice. Actually, yesterday was the first day of summer. Central time, 9:42, Friday, June 20th. But today is the summer solstice. It's also my birthday. It's the longest day of the year, the most maximum possible sunlight. All good things begin today. So embrace it, especially here in Milwaukee, the great Milwaukee summer. There's nothing like it. We're all about community on the show, growing community, making your part of the world just a little bit better, just like the good community-minded people at Horicon Bank. We appreciate their support. So when you look at community, and I mentioned the Great Milwaukee Summer, I highly encourage you to bring the entire family to Summerfest. You may not think, wow, I shouldn't bring my small kids to Summerfest. Yes, Friday afternoon, maybe the Saturday afternoon, bring the kids to Summerfest. Let them experience the lakefront. Let them experience especially the Northwestern Mutual Community Park, that inclusive play space there. It's open year-round, so you can bring them anytime. But when Summerfest is happening, that space is just lively. It's activated, and it's really, really special. So highly encourage you to bring the entire family to Summerfest this year. In that same neighborhood along Milwaukee's lakefront is the amazing Betty Brin Children's Museum. It's full of experienced play-based exhibits that your kids will learn a ton from. I'm excited today on the show to have two of the senior leaders from Betty Brin join us to talk about one of their new exhibits and also give us hopefully a look into the future of what the Betty Brin Children's Museum may look like. And I know they're looking for a new spot possibly too. Maybe Stacy Bartsch, who is the Vice President of Marketing and Communications, maybe Stacy will have some insights for us there. Later in the show, Martin Moore's back, the future of almost everything. I think we're going to talk about the Trump phone, Amazon, and Martin has an idea for a new app. Pretty good idea too. I think I'm going to invest. We're going to be a part of this. This is going to be big. But as we do at each and every beginning of the show, we're going to go two up.
Now it's time for the
two, count 'em, two.
Two up on the upswing.
Two up, two things in the business world that I'm seeing that you need to know about right now. One, very Milwaukee-based here, but new lights are coming to the Pabst Brewery District. You know that big Pabst sign that hangs over Juneau Avenue in Milwaukee's Brewery District? It's going to get a modern new twist. You know, nothing truly innovative here, but it's going to get new LED lighting, which is going to be a massive enhancement to that sign that connects the Malthouse Apartments and the Brewhouse Inn and Suites and kind of overlooks the Deer District and the entire downtown. Proposed LED lights by the Brewery Neighborhood Improvement District are going to further activate that sign. There's some costs there that the committee's still going through, but representatives from the Neighborhood Improvement District recently told the city that the sign has outdated electrical components and it needs new LED lighting. So they're going to make some changes and they're going to light it up just a bit brighter. So watch for that, hopefully by the end of the summer. Next up, super intelligence. Everyone's talking AI. About 10 days ago or so, Meta said that it was launching a new artificial intelligence lab that's focused on super intelligence. Now, this is Meta's kind of their path to create AI systems that surpass human intelligence. The initiative is part of a reorganization at the company that owns Facebook and Instagram and Threads, and it's going to include key figures like Scale AI founder Alexander Wang. The company's move really kind of takes their effort to be a true AI leader in the tech space to the next level. But just a little bit more on AI, because we're all thinking, all right, how is AI going to affect our jobs? AI isn't here to take away your job. I don't think that. But what's really going on now is that we're automating a lot of the repetitive tasks that fill our workdays. So, as AI continues to come into the modern workplace, I think we all have to see it as an opportunity to open up brand new opportunities and roles that we haven't imagined yet. So, you're going to hear CEOs and leaders talk about AI replacing jobs. You heard it this week with Andy Jassy, who's the CEO at Amazon. And he said, being AI forward is a mindset and a career imperative. But at the same time, he talked about possible cuts coming at Amazon. In short, the way I'm looking at it is that AI isn't replacing you, but it's about empowering you to do your best work. So it's on us to learn as much as we can each and every day, build the relationships, think strategically, stay community-minded, and always come up with creative solutions with or without AI. When we come back from the break, the good people at Betty Brin Children's Museum will join us. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Today we are joined in studio by two of the wonderful leaders at the Betty Brin Children's Museum right here in beautiful, sunny downtown Milwaukee. It's a place for learning. Learning and play go hand in hand for sure at the Betty Brin Children's Museum. Stacy Bartsch is the Vice President of Marketing and Communications. Sarah McManus Christie is the Senior Director of Education. We're going to look into play-based learning. It's really critical as we look at kind of the future, not only of MPS, but of all the children in the region in terms of connecting to reading skills, play skills, and just tapping that inner creativity that all kids have. So for fans who are listening right now, Sarah, if we're not familiar with Betty Brin and all the wonderful work you do, give us a little overview of the museum, and then I want to talk a bit specifically about play-based learning.
Sure, absolutely. So our exhibits at the Children's Museum allow both children and caregivers to really interact in that learning through play, which I think is something not everyone thinks about when they're going to plan their day. Like, well, how can we actually have this bonding experience? So our exhibits are really grounded in what is that intergenerational learning opportunity and reminding adults how to play too and still have fun.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think children's museums are not only about the kids, they're about bringing together generations because we learn so much through our children, whether it's, you know, community knowledge or just kind of tap in something that we haven't thought about for a while. You feel that with your guests and members that, you know, when the parents come, they kind of leave like, wow, I'm better for this experience too.
Yeah, you know, you see the joy. You see it. You feel it. You see parents and caregivers putting their phones away, which, as we all know,
yes,
is a challenge throughout our days.
Yes.
So when we can have a chance to tuck those screens away in our pockets and be really present with our kiddos, we see that a lot at the museum, which tells us we're on some sort of right path with our experiences.
When you dive into the benefits of engaging in play-based learning, what are they specifically?
Oh, man. Where to start,
yes.
You know, especially for our age range. So we know a lot about what brain science research is telling us about development and that, you know, baby's brain is going to double in size that first year. Hmm. And then by 3 years old, it's 80% of the adult size brain. And by five, it's already 90%. So lots is happening in those first three to 5 years. And the opportunities for kiddos to engage in that play-based learning in our museum spaces is unbelievably important for social, emotional, cognitive, language development. We also explore a lot of different areas for physical development. I mean, where to start and where to end, it really is, the opportunities are extremely endless.
Yeah, I'm excited. In the next segment, we're going to talk about one of your new exhibits. And it's making me as a dad feel and look back when our kids were younger, like, well, the books that we read to them really had impact at age two, whether it was a story or just the pictures. Like, that experience has more impact than you realize when you're doing it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we'll talk more about that exhibit, but it definitely has a lot of ties for caregivers around those pre-literacy skills.
Yeah.
So all the things we can be doing right away from birth that allow a kid to generate that true love for learning and then become lifelong readers.
We'll be right back. I'm Jeff Sherman. This is The Upswing, and we are proudly presented by Horicon Bank. Welcome back to The Upswing, proudly presented by Horicon Bank. We're talking with Sarah McManus-Christie, Senior Director of Education at the Betty Brin Children's Museum. So, Sarah, as you're designing the exhibits at the museum, I'm guessing there's a bit of art and science to it. How do you really make sure that you're maximizing the developmental benefits for our kids when you're looking at how can these exhibits really maximize that impact?
We talk a lot about innovation. So why do the experiences we create in our exhibits not exist other places? How's the programming and then the approach to the aesthetic in that space really set us apart from anywhere else in the city? We have a lot of different criteria we address, so play types, play schema, opportunities for practicing 21st century skills, so communication, nice. Collaboration. And then recently we actually started talking a lot about these six design elements that are proven to also help settle the nervous system. So thinking about for grown-ups who are coming into our spaces, overwhelmed, overstimulated, exhausted. What does it take for them to come into a space and like, oh, okay, I can take a deep breath and enjoy some playtime with my kiddo. So natural lighting, color palettes, clutter and organization, making sure we're creating spaces that pave the way for kiddos to have that creative and critical thinking confidence building. Yeah.
And parents have to know then, too, when they're there, that you've kind of taken care of that experience. Like, as parents, we don't have to walk through and make sure everything is put away
and make sure it's clean.
It's more about, hey, let's see the exhibits through our child's eyes and just, appreciate the benefits that are going to come.
And follow their lead. So that constructivist learning is what we talk about a lot in our educational programming. So kiddos can be, we like to say, like the heroes of their own journey or protagonists of their story. They get to make choices. Yeah. When so few places in their world do they get to actually
make
those choices.
That's a hard thing sometimes for parents.
Right? It sure is, and we get that.
We want to lead our child. We want to make sure that they're doing things the right way.
Exactly.
Yes. But somehow you just got to sit back and love it. So as in terms of the goals of the exhibits, I'm guessing as a kind of a community icon that you want to make sure you're tackling the educational goals that the community has, whether it's this district or that district. How do you balance those in terms of educating and then really creating the innovative playtime at the same time?
Children's museums have a unique role in being advocates for play-based learning. So instead of this idea that maybe educational goals like our curriculum, our state standards have to be separate from play, we are here to advocate for how mutually exclusive they have to be. They have to happen simultaneously. Kids need more than gym time and recess being identified as their play periods. So it really isn't a question so much as balancing it.
Okay.
It's saying, hey, here's what the curriculums are for the state. Here's how we're meeting all of those things through different innovative ways that are approached through play instead of testing and some of the more traditional formats of learning.
Yeah. And then I guess, on top of that, you have to balance the revenue component of driving memberships, looking into the box of sponsors, making sure you're engaging in the right way there too, correct?
Absolutely. And that's, when we see those attendance spikes with new exhibits, so like a traveler exhibit, like we have Storyland and some other exciting exhibit refreshes and updates we have coming in the next year. So that's what helps us really drive that attendance and therefore helps drive that revenue.
As a passionate, lifelong Milwaukeean, I only eat Palermo's frozen pizza. So when I take my kids to the Betty Brin Children's Museum, I'm like, whoa, there's the new exhibit from Palermo's. And so it's a great way to anchor to an institution that's family-based that, hey, maybe someday kids could work at, or if nothing else, might sell a couple extra pizzas for them.
And you now also can get a slice of that Palermo's pizza for real in our cafe, which is an exciting ad we've just started.
All right. Very good. Very good. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to take a closer look at the Betty Brin Children's Museum's newest exhibits, including the one kind of brings some of our best beloved children's books to life. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Community through our children's museums. Two of the leaders from the Betty Brin Children's Museum join us. Stacy Bartsch is the Vice President of Marketing and Communications. And we just heard from Sarah McManus-Christie, who's the Senior Director of Education. Stacy, you have a couple new exhibits at the museum this summer. including Storyland. This is the big new exhibit. I want to talk about that a little bit. Tell us how that was concepted, what it's all about, and what families and kids can expect.
Yeah, Storyland is a new traveling exhibit from our friends at Minnesota Children's Museum.
Okay.
It brings to life seven of our most beloved children's books to life. Abuela, Chicka Chicka Boom Boom, If You Give a Mouse a Cookie, The Snowy Day, The Tale of Peter Rabbit, Tuesday, and Where's Spot? So it's really an immersive experience where kids and families can jump from book to book, journeying through each story to develop early reading skills and hopefully develop a lifelong love of reading.
And is there opportunities to read the books there with parents and grandparents? Or, you know, how walk us through what the exhibit looks and feels
like. Yeah, so each of the books have a separate space within the exhibit. And all of it is immersive, so you're truly stepping into an experience of the book. Like, for instance, Peter Rabbit has his own burrow where you can cook up a breakfast or put him to bed. You can also harvest vegetables in his garden. Every book has something that comes to life within the space, but it also brings to life brings the actual book itself to life in English and Spanish.
I always enjoyed reading that If You Give a Mouse a Cookie book to our kids because it really has that, like, I don't know, the message is like you keep asking, you escalate these wants and needs, and like it just it has wonderful lessons, but at the same time, it's kind of funny.
It's very special, and what's great is most parents that come through our exhibits have that nostalgic memory of the book from either when they were little or them reading to kids when they're going to bed. So it's fun not only for the little ones, but for parents as well.
Is that nostalgia component important as you're putting together exhibits? Because I'm guessing like you want to be fresh and relevant and always having something new at the museum. Is nostalgia a big component? Because your audience, yes, they're kids, but it's the parents and grandparents who are taking the kids to the museum.
Yeah, oh, for sure. When thinking through exhibit design and ideas, making sure that there's some component of nostalgia to create that shared experience between the generations. Yeah. That's what creates magic memories and why they'll come back.
Yeah, good. Looking ahead, kind of, what's on the horizon for the Betty Brin Children's Museum? Any new upcoming projects, master plan, goals that you're excited about? I'm sure all of the above, but walk us through kind of what the future looks like.
Sure. We also this summer spring and summer, had our very first artist-in-residence join us at the museum, Malik Johnson, who has brought his world-renowned cello skills to the kiddos and families of Milwaukee, which has been really wonderful. We have him for a little bit longer here where we'll be doing a unique composition of Betty Brin, so the sounds of Betty Brin, which we're really excited about.
Nice.
We've also kicked off a Fork Farm hydroponic garden, so parents can learn about, kiddos and parents can learn about different forms of where our food grows, sustainability, alongside our traditional garden programming that we have on the balcony.
That's bringing all the generations together, that health, wellness, longevity component. I mean, everyone's interested in
it.
That's awesome.
And in October, we have a brand new permanent exhibit coming to life. It's called The North Woods.
Okay.
So this will be another immersive experience transporting kids and families into the beloved North Woods, Wisconsin. Which is really exciting.
Tap maple syrup or like what are some of the components of that? You can't tell us yet?
I can't tell you.
There is the tease. Yes.
But what I can tell you is it's going to combine a thrill of an escape room with a climbing structure. So it's going to inspire, again, that intergenerational play so that caregivers and kids can do the activities and the interactive mystery puzzles together.
Very good. We'll look forward to that, Stacy, for sure. So in terms of the location for the museum, I know there's been talk through the years, like you're on the lakefront at the museum center, comfortable in the space there, but probably always looking for, hey, what could come next? Any thoughts there in terms of where the museum is going to perch long term?
Mm-hmm. We're celebrating our 30th anniversary nice. This year, which is super exciting. We continue to work diligently on visioning and planning for our future, which will include a new home.
Okay.
We don't have anything necessarily to share quite yet.
Okay.
But we have really big dreams, and part of those dreams is to expand our footprint, which will in turn impact more kids.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Well, hey, for now, the space of the lakefront, really easy to get to. The parking is convenient. It's fun. Right now, we're recording the first weekend of Summerfest. You can go to Summerfest afterwards. You bring the whole family. It's simple. It's convenient and super fun. So keep doing the good work that you do each and every day. And keep us updated on new things as they happen.
We will. Thank you.
Thanks for your time. I appreciate
Jeff.
It.
It's time to fast forward. Welcome to the future of almost everything in Wisconsin on the upswing. Joining WTMJ's Jeff Sherman, here's Martin Moore.
Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Our good friend Martin Moore joins us in studio. The future of almost everything. We can't cover everything, but we can cover a lot in a little bit of time. So, Martin, my afternoons, I always enjoy getting out
nap.
Of the office. Oh, well, no. I'm a walker in the afternoon.
Ooh,
I try to, like,
I thought
schedule.
You run.
I do run, usually at night or early mornings. But afternoon, I try to schedule, like, at least a 10-minute walk.
Sure.
Just to... I leave the phone in the office. Actually, I bring the phone because I use it to buy something.
Yeah, but you pretend it's not in
But I pretend I'm unavailable. So I'll walk through the neighborhood, and if I'm on the east side of Milwaukee, there's a big Whole Foods market there.
Mm.
I'll stop in, maybe grab an apple or maybe
pint of ice cream.
Four
yeah. You never know, whatever
or something.
You're in the mood for.
Yeah, whatever I need. But I've been tempted as I'm checking out to dive into this Amazon One or scan the palm.
Ooh.
And it takes my information, and then it's just always there for me.
Sure.
So I had to ask, from your expert technology lens, what are some of the kind of the concerns over this type of kind of biometric payment
sure.
that Amazon's kind of pushing on us?
Sure,
right?
Sure, sure. You know, I think like all biometric data, the biggest concern is privacy,
yeah.
You know, whether it's retinal scans or face scans or fingerprints or your palm or a footprint, whatever it is,
right.
That data is kept, it's logged, and it's very personal. And most importantly, it's yours and it identifies you. And so what is a large company like Amazon going to do with that? How safe is it? How secure is it? I think those that's probably the biggest concern.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously,
I mean,
not the
if
only.
If I'm already Amazon Prime customer, I'm scanning my code anyway, and they have all that data and they know
sure.
all about me. But this, it seems like it's that next step. Years ago, Kroger
sure.
did the finger pay,
yeah.
and they went away from it because of those privacy concerns.
Sure, exactly. You know, it's really no different than a password. It's just a very big password. It takes all these touch points, no pun intended, takes all these touch points. You know, it looks at your veins, it
yeah.
looks at fingerprints, the shape of your hand, and it basically just creates a number. And it's just this giant code of numbers, and that's how it identifies you.
Yeah.
And so I don't know that it's necessarily better or worse than if they have that for like your eye or your fingerprint or something like that. But
right.
I think it really comes down to one, what they're going to do with it. Two, you know, how safe and secure is it? In three, you know, can it be hacked? Can someone steal it
right.
and then use it to purchase things on their behalf?
I mean, when you talk about building community and trust, like how do companies build trust over this type of
right.
technology? Are there specific things that they can do, or is it just like
oh, absolutely.
The consumer's got to get there, but the companies are going to continue to push this because they want the data, they
sure.
want the information, and they want us in their ecosystem
absolutely.
At all times.
Absolutely. I mean, you look at a company like Apple, and you know their whole marketing ethos is privacy. Everything is done on device. All your Face ID scans, all your passwords, everything that you search on Safari, all of that stuff, they market the fact that that's on device and they don't have the key and they can't give any governments the key. Companies like Amazon and Google, their business model is antithetical to that. They sell that. That's money for them. Your data is what allows them to do business and build warehouses and all that stuff. Yeah. And so you do sort of approach a company like Amazon or Google with some cynicism when they're, you don't know what they're doing with that data, because right. they have a history of selling it and maybe doing, nefarious isn't the word, but doing things with it that you may not yeah. agree with, or even knew that they would do with it. I think yeah. that's probably the biggest concern.
So speaking of phones, are you all in on the Trump Organization phone?
I saw that.
Have you already pre-ordered?
No, I haven't. No. Well, the problem, I don't even know where you can pre-order. I don't know if it's available. I don't
yet.
Know who. The weird thing is it doesn't say where it's made. Right. Doesn't say who manufactures it. A lot of the specs, if you go on there, are like incorrect.
Right.
It's like giving like watt hours for the battery and using that as like the how fast the processor. Actually, it doesn't even name the processor. There's a lot of technical information that hasn't been divulged.
Yeah.
So
I mean, they unveiled a mobile phone plan, $499 smartphone that's set to launch in
September.
Which
I don't understand how.
Yeah, how do you produce it for that?
Is it,
or how do you sell it at retail for that price?
My question is how much of it is made in the United States? Because it's literally impossible in 2025 to make an iPhone in the United States. There are just certain crystals and chemicals and minerals that you need to make batteries and screens and circuit boards and all of that stuff that just you cannot get it here. You cannot make it here. It has to come from China or Vietnam or something.
Right.
And so what percentage of this phone is made in the United States that
right.
can get them to a $499 price
right.
point? Because that's pretty low
yeah.
in today's standards.
Yeah. I mean, you can put the gold-colored metal case etched with an American flag on it, but that doesn't
sure.
quell any of the concerns. And then, obviously, you have some of the ethical concerns, conflict of interest, and how do you think those are going to be addressed, or will they be?
I mean, it'll be like everything. He has his sons and family taking care of all that, and apparently, you know, the president's not involved, which I don't
right.
buy, because if family's taking care of my finances and my business dealings, even though I may not be directly involved, it's all being done in my best interest. They're not going to let – if there's an opportunity, they're going to take it. And it'll be interesting to see how all that plays out, because this is the first time, you know, we've ever had a president that, you know, has dealings and businesses and things
right.
Before, during, and after their presidency that could be a conflict of interest. So I think
yeah.
it's uncharted waters, and I'll be curious to see how, you know, his administration navigates that.
Mm-hmm. All right, when we come back, I need to get your thoughts on Apple's liquid glass from a design standpoint.
I'm a
designer at heart, so
yes.
I know you're going to be passionate around
thoughts.
Liquid glass for Apple. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing, joined by Martin Moore, the future of almost everything. So many new technologies coming at us fast and furious. Recently, Martin, Apple introduced liquid glass, kind of a major new design language. Kind of creates this more immersive, dynamic experience in their phones, maybe on the iPad, on all their devices. Wanted to get your thoughts on the why here, because I can't quite get my arms around, like, is this a move to, like, drive new device categories? Is it a move into AI? Is it just, like, a cool design thing that they felt
bingo.
Like they had to do? Like,
bingo.
Give me the why.
Apple, from a technological standpoint in the industry, in my opinion, has stalled. AI has really stalled that. And that's really the big thing that, you know, everyone's talking about and everyone wants on their devices. And Apple, if you have been paying attention, hasn't been able to deliver the Apple intelligence that they advertised with the previous operating system.
Right.
And if you're in marketing, one of the things that you can do and one of the little tricks that you always learn is if something you advertise doesn't go your way, distract the customers with something else shiny and bright and new.
Give them something.
And so
yes.
Maybe they had been working on this all along, but they already had sort of the building blocks from the Apple Vision Pro, because this is the visual design language Apple Vision Pro uses.
Okay.
So, you know, make a bright, shiny new operating system. You don't really change the core functionality of the device, but everybody thinks it's something new and cutting edge.
Gives you
and
that wow factor.
They forget all about the fact that Apple Intelligence is dead on arrival.
Yeah.
And so I think that's one of the reasons why they did it. Now, that being said, I think it's terrible. A lot of it is unreadable. I've been using it. There's a lot of tweaking that's going to have to go on. Yeah. But customers are going to get, I think, a little shock when they're browsing the internet and looking at images, and everything sort of just melts together depending on what your wallpaper is.
To your point,
is.
This could be all about the Apple Vision Pro and kind of their augmented reality ambitions that they're already existing, but I'm sure they want to go bigger and bolder. So that's what it's about. But does it showcase well on their other devices?
Right.
I don't know.
Debatable. There are some cool new features. Spatial. I think if you have like the 15 and 16 Pro devices, you can now turn on something called, it's like Spatial Images. It just says Spatial, but it's this button you click, and it'll take all the depth information in your image and turn it into, it'll like chop it up and create this parallax effect where it looks like it's 3D. I'll have to show it to you.
Okay.
So there could be a selfie of you and your family in Hawaii. You hit this button and it turns it into a 3D image. And as you move your phone around, it sort of separates you from the background.
Okay.
Facebook has been doing this for years. That is actually really, really, really cool how they do that. And there's a couple new things, but for the most part, it's a visual overhaul.
Okay.
It's some parts of it are nice. Other parts are kind of like, why?
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of travel and Apple, I saw a couple of reports that Apple's announced a new digital ID feature that's going to allow travelers to save their passports in Apple Wallet.
Yeah.
Is that going to replace the passport? Is that where they're going to go? Like, like, does TSA, are they going to give us that pleasure?
Right. They already did this years ago with the digital IDs, which work in a couple states. I can't remember the which states they are. This is mostly like a you go to the TSA, you flash it in front of them, and if they say, sorry, that's not good enough, we need to see the real thing. Okay, cool. Here's my real one. You still have to bring your passport. You still should bring your ID.
Right.
But ideally, it would be nice if all that stuff was on your device and you had it with you all the time. At a minimum, it's a great backup. You lose your passport.
Right.
At a minimum, you can say, here, you have my passport number on here. It's in your system. Put the number in. And so at a minimum, it's a great backup if you don't have an ID or a passport. So I love it.
Yeah.
The question is what states and airports are going to implement it. I can assure you Wisconsin will be last on that list.
We're going to study it. We're going to do a lot of white papers.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to take it under consideration.
No.
Yes. We'll get there, though. At some point.
I like it. I don't really carry a wallet anymore. Everything I have is on my phone.
Yeah.
All my keys are in my Apple Wallet for my house, my car, everything. I don't have car keys. I don't have a house key.
Yeah.
I enjoy having that.
Yeah. It's a good
And if you have a watch or something or an iPad, now you have it on a redundant device. So it's better than having one credit card you can lose. It's better than having one set of car keys you can lose, because if you lose your phone, you got your watch. You lose your watch, you got your iPad. And so the redundancy, I think, is a interesting alternative and rebuttal to why would you want it on your device, your passport or your keys or your ID.
All right. We talk a lot about community on the upswing. You had a great social post the other day around community for couples.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And I thought it was really interesting. You basically asked the question.
Patent pending this.
Right. We're throwing this out to the universe because we kind of want it to happen, but Martin and I will be investors in this.
Yes.
The million-dollar idea, you said, is a Match.com for couples.
Mm-hmm.
You got to weed out maybe some
the swingers.
The swingers, right? You don't want that.
Yeah.
But you wanted to create an app where couples could meet other couples with similar interests that just want new couple friends to become friends to hang out with, which as you get older.
Do you find it more difficult?
I think we both have a lot of friends, a lot of good circle. But oftentimes it's like, ooh, these are work friends. These are the kids' friends. These are this. And we just want people that want to share our same interests and passion.
Exactly.
And if I could find that easy, location-based, I'm all in.
Exactly.
And also it creates a little bit of a discovery and curiosity point too, because you're meeting new people that
way. For sure. I mean, think about your lifetime and you and your wife and all of the – I assume like me and my wife and like many other couples, you've had – couple friends that you traveled with and you hung out all the time and you did barbecues, and then all of a sudden, one day you weren't friends anymore. You don't know what happened. Maybe they got divorced. Maybe they moved, whatever. And you're like, man, I really miss them. We could just go over to their house. We didn't care if it was clean. They come to our house. We could be in our pajamas. We'd be up till 2 a.m. drinking wine, talking about we went to Vegas. And those are the types of couple friends that I'm talking about that on a Wednesday night, you're like, hey, you guys want to hang out and just have a couple beers on the patio? Mm-hmm. And you show up in your flip-flops and you don't really care. And those kinds of friendships, I feel like, get more and more difficult as you age. And so, you get an app where you plug in what you like to do. I like to hike. I like to gamble. I like beer. I like this and that. And then you meet up with other couples. And you know what? They were so, because there's no better feeling than when you meet another couple and then you're on that ride home with your spouse and you're like, or your girlfriend or boyfriend, whatever. And you're like, they were so fun. We need to hang out with them. They're dangerous. We need to hang out with them again. That's one of the best feelings in adult life, in my opinion.
The community building, coupling aspect of the upswing done. You do something with location-based. You match the interests. You have the right filters. You do profiles. I think the app could work.
Would you use it?
Stand out. I would use it for sure.
I would use it.
You have to have the right guardrails, of course.
Absolutely.
But I think you started in a market like Milwaukee,
yep,
and you can scale it nationwide. Let's do it.
I like it.
Martin Moore, Koss, content creator, and more. Always appreciate your time and
insights.
Thank you. We're thankful for our partnership with Horicon Bank. They're doing banking differently. Always there to serve you and your business. Highly recommend you stop at Golden Nest Pancakes and Cafe, too, if you ever head out there. Wonderful food and robots. And a good partner of Horicon's.